February 18th, 2025, and you are listening to Super Gamecast Daily. Today, we are going to be talking about some Marvel Rival playoffs. Nintendo Rewards Program is going away. Shuhei Yoshida and some issues he had at PlayStation. And Seamus Blackley has some things to say about the power of consoles. All of that on Super Gamecast Daily. I am Bronson Fiore, your host, joined by a Mr. Duncan Crabtree.
That's me, your other host.
My other host.
Yep, your other host.
The other white meat.
Yep. Exactly.
Okay. Anyway,
you know, surprisingly little video game in today's stories. I think one video game is really all it's directly about.
The first news story involves Marvel Rivals. So I'm not sure if you've gotten to play Marvel Rivals yet, but it's like a massive.
I have.
Yeah, it's a massive, massive success. We should play sometime.
We should.
I'm gold one as of last night.
I'm unranked. I've only joined random matches with friends who I'm playing another game with them, and then they go, go play Rivals. And then I'm like, I guess I'll go play Rivals.
All right, well, that's cool. Don't worry, I can yell at you till you're good, because that's how that works.
There you go.
All right, well, so massive success. It was kind of weird when we got a news story today saying they're laying off some U.S.-based developers, including its game director, saying, quote, "This is such a weird industry. My stellar talented team just helped deliver an incredibly successful new franchise in Marvel Rivals for NetEase Games, and we were just laid off." And then someone pointed out that, hey, this is really weird considering how successful this is, including one says, "It's been a massive hit and one of the few games has been able to break through the live service wall." I don't know, folks. I just don't know. So where are we at in your opinion with this?
You know what they say, you make a bad game, you get fired. You make a good game, you get fired. You make an amazing game, and you surprisingly also get fired, as the meme goes.
You remind me of that cow to slaughter meme with the two.
Yeah. You know, it's obvious here that this has nothing to do with the performance of the developers, because, like, what better performance could you conceivably ask for?
What the performance of a game? This is a top three game on Steam right now. And it's like top two on every platform. Like, it's crazy.
Right. Like, and, you know, as game launches inflate in their launch values, as you know, the number of people that have played games has always effectively gone up. This means this is almost certainly one of the biggest launches, like, of all time. Like, what more can you ask of any developer than one of the biggest launches of all time?
Not only that, like, this game hit real mainstream capacity when I had friends who don't play competitive games, have no interest in competitive games or shooters at all, being like, "Yo, I heard you playing Marvel Rivals. Yo, you want to play some?"
Yeah, I mean, I'm an example. I've effectively lost all of my interest in playing video games in a competitive fashion, and yet, you know, I'll pop into a little match of Marvel Rivals.
Yeah, like, and me, like, as someone who loves competitive games, I'm like sweating it out. I solo queued rank to gold one. I'm not that far from platinum. I'm big turbo sweaty. Yeah, Moon Knight, the moon haunts you.
Yeah,
you may have heard that.
I'm still deciding who I play. Usually Iron Man or Jeff the Shark.
Let me tell you, Iron Man, if you can con one of your friends into playing Hulk, is an unstoppable killing machine.
I haven't been able to yet, but I've noticed that anytime there's an enemy Iron Man, I lose, and it's because there's always also an enemy Hulk, because they, like, thought about it.
Yeah, no, I last time I was playing with Anthony, I'm like, because Anthony's been our tank, and I'm like, I need you to learn how to play the Hulk.
Yeah.
Yes.
So this move is obviously related to NetEase wanting to pull out of North America, as a bunch of developers have said in the news story. You know, it's that they're a Chinese-based developer and they're pulling out of North American investments. So they want to shut down their studios in North America, of which there are quite a few, and that involves firing people off and just retracting
Yes.
appointments.
A Bungie employee who Bungie is located pretty close to NetEase's North American offices in Seattle, said they were, part of the decision to pull out of North America. NetEase also split with Worlds Untold, the studio founded by Mass Effect writer Mark Walters, as well as Sparks of Joy, founded by Xbox veteran Jerry Hook. The only insight that they can add is NetEase is pulling all investments out of North America, started last year. Are these layoffs all NA design teams? If so, then it appears no. It doesn't matter how successful your game is. Corporate policy created by geopolitics and trade relationships do. The remaining North American studios include California-based Bullet Farm, who was founded last year with Call of Duty Black Ops designer David Vondihar. And before that, NetEase found an anchor point with Control's lead with studios in Spain and Seattle. They also have a Texas-based studio, T-Minus-Zero, which is creating a sci-fi MMO, which I'm willing to bet money that is the next one to go. That
Yeah.
is the, like, MMO, you mean the genre for boomer gamers that know
Yeah,
that.
you know, developing an MMO is like kneeling down and being ready to be shot in the back of the head.
Yeah, it's also like for the company who is funding it, just like shoveling money into a furnace. You know that Fairly Odd Parents gif? That is literally what it is. Just dude's
Of them
effort. Just
shoveling money in a furnace.
yeah,
Yeah.
that's literally what developing a modern MMO is. My girlfriend always complains about us not having new MMOs to play, and I'm just like, I don't know what to tell you.
And yet,
They
there is no one genre I want to have like some super incredible brand new thing released in
You better hope
more.
Ashes of Creation is real good. You better hope Ashes of Creation is real good.
It seems all right, you know.
That entire genre is just begging to like Ashes of Creation to be good.
I mean, they've got some cool ideas, but it feels like it plays like a World of Warcraft with some quirks, and then they're doing an EVE Online but fantasy, which, to be fair, we've needed an EVE Online but fantasy, so good for them.
Yeah, really break down what an MMO really is, which is spreadsheets. That's what MMOs
Yeah.
are. They're just spreadsheets as a game. I'm not kidding you. The amount of I work a day job where I mess around with spreadsheets a lot, and it is absolutely hilarious to me the amount of knowledge I have, not from like traditional schooling or like self-taught, like from playing 20 years of Warcraft and looking at graphs and
Yeah,
charts.
absolutely. The MMO genre is spreadsheets, though I will say EVE Online in particular is spreadsheets and betrayal. So, you know, I think the fantasy genre has been needing some deep and horrible
Spreadsheets and
betrayal.
betrayal. I will say that I do. That's going to be the title of this podcast. I'm going to write it down right now. Spreadsheets and betrayal.
Spreadsheets
Thank you.
and betrayal. But yeah, you know, it's a shame to see all these studios being shut down. You would hope that they'd find some form of alternative of maybe giving them a buyback option or a loan or something, you know, selling them selling their stake. But you know, it's just too much extra work for these companies, evidently. It's a lot easier for them and more profitable to just let things go.
The shittiest part about this story is like it has nothing to do with the quality of the game or the publisher itself. It is legitimately
Yeah.
just due to the state of the world, fuck North America right now. We outie. And
Yeah.
that's unfortunate because this is Like Marvel Rivals, once again, it is an incredible video game. Like I used to be someone who was hooked on Overwatch, and I'm probably even more hooked on Marvel Rivals. Like the only difference with Sorry, go ahead.
I was gonna say that I don't think this is gonna end up affecting any of their outside of North America stuff, though.
No.
Their initiative to disinvest. They founded a studio with Toshihiro Nagoshi, designer of Like a Dragon, and the Resident Evil producer Hiroyuki Kobayashi. And they invested in Suda 51's Grasshopper, and they're probably just gonna still do all that.
I hope that Suda 51 gets a new game. He yet like that I
Yeah.
love, you know, I loved me some Shadows of the Damned remaster. I want in more sequels to No More Heroes and Killer 7 and new games from him because he is a goddamn artist. Yeah.
Yeah, until No More Heroes 6 comes out, I will be some form of lesser in my realization in the world, my very being will be suboptimal until there's a sixth No More Heroes game, not a fourth or a fifth. All right, those also need to happen just to get there, but we need six of them.
I agree. No more heroes. Yeah, this is a bummer. It is a bummer when geopolitics affect art, and I do think this could affect long-term Marvel Rivals just because, you know, you're losing your lead designer and your level designer in a game where kind of both those things are important. But
It turns out their next major layoff, Jeff the Shark. They're just laying off the character,
Yep,
and he won't be in the game anymore.
no more. And then eats an entire team. No more of
Yeah, they don't want to pay his salary. He comes expensive.
that. So they got two new characters coming out this Friday.
Oh, okay. Already?
No, they said they're planning to do like four characters a quarter. So like
That's crazy.
yeah,
That's a
no.
crazy amount of characters to do.
Well, so we got the Fantastic Four this quarter, and they're already teasing Blade for next quarter.
Damn.
And
Do we have the Thing and the Human Torch?
that's this Friday.
It's this Friday.
Yep.
Okay.
And let me tell you, Human Torch looks absurdly overpowered.
The Horch himself, he's coming.
Also he gets if you use his ult and Storm uses hers, it gets even bigger and stronger. It becomes a
Oh,
fire tornado. And it
a
literally
tornado.
yes, a tornado. And it could and it can eat through Luna Snow's ult. It's one of the two
It's
ults that
crazy
can
that they're gonna have two Hulks.
They kind of function differently. Like I'll you and I can geek about that later.
Well, one of them rock, the other one skin.
Roll.
Yeah.
No, from a gameplay standpoint, it looks like the thing does more damage but isn't as tanky from what I can
I
see.
see.
And they also their ults are kind of different, and also of course the thing doesn't transform back into Bruce Banner and get murdered in 2 seconds. So,
What
yeah.
if you did, though? He
Then
transforms back into his human form and he goes, "I need to go see my wife," and then dies immediately.
on the accurate thing. Anyway. Hey, we have another news story though. We gotta keep it going. Nintendo, they seem to be trimming down some of their rewards programs. Like they seem the apparently the first thing they're doing is they are cutting down the buying. So they have this program where if you're a Nintendo Switch Online member, you can buy a voucher, two vouchers for $100, and use them on basically almost any Nintendo game, which that takes a $70 Tears of the Kingdom down to effectively $50. It's kind of,
Yeah. So here's a down low on this story, okay? Nintendo hates it when you have money because they want that money. They're hungry, hungry money men, and women. and they hunger for the money. And so they need you to stop saving $20.
Stop saving $30 potentially. Because you get two vouchers.
Two games. Yeah. Up to 40 in a special scenario. Yeah. And really, don't be selfish. Come on. Stop saving $40.
They're hungry. I'm not gonna lie, this is one of those perks that totally made Nintendo Switch Online really worth it. Like, every year I would buy my voucher and get two games. Like, because you think your Nintendo Switch Online membership, if you have the fancy one, that's $50 a year. Well, I'm saving, you know, $20 to $30 right here. So it's like, you know, and then if I just...
It on net is worth it if you know you're going to buy two mainline Nintendo games.
And I almost always do. So it's like, yeah, that 100% worth it. So I'm curious to see what they're going to do to replace, like, for Switch 2 games. And I have a feeling the reason they're doing this is because... you know, they're only going to have, like, two games at launch. And they're like, we need to make full price money on these two launch games and these first year games.
You know, I have another theory. Right. I have another theory.
Right. Hit me.
I think this, in combination with our next story we'll get to shortly, about their gold program. I think that literally there's, like, a department in charge of managing this, or that it's, like, the job of a couple people to make sure that there's an effective rewards program, and that they just don't want to do that anymore, and that they haven't been seeing an incredible amount of return on their rewards program, and that they're like, let's just save ourselves the labor of managing the program and maybe not lay anybody off that's doing it, but, you know, at least shift their tasks to some other part of the company. It honestly feels like something that is, it's not actually a major effect on the profitability of these games, I don't think. I think they literally just want to be out of the obligation of running the programs entirely, which is why they're so, like, clear about, we're still going to cover it up to this date. We're still going to make sure you can use it. We're still going to do all this. You can still use it on normal Switch games. I think it's literally just all about how they want to phase the program out entirely. Possibly replace it with another rewards program, but I doubt it because their current one's well-liked.
And that's my big question is, like, okay, well, then what do you replace this with? Because with this gone, you're losing value on your Switch Online membership. Like, you're losing a lot of value on your Switch Online membership. It's like, okay, well, what are you going to replace this with then? Maybe you're going to, like, they could do something like, oh, you get broader discount. Like, Game Pass has this thing where you get, like, 10% off all games that are on Game Pass that you buy. Maybe they could do, like, if you're a Switch Online member, you get 10% off all first-party Nintendo games, maybe?
I think that Switch Online is so necessary for some games. They know that people are just gonna get it anyways, and so they kind of don't need to add much to the value proposition because it's cheap. It's really cheap. It's by far the cheapest
online service available. If you get the base plan, it's like $20 a year. It's like not even like that is a month of Game Pass, dude.
it's literally down to I don't have Switch Online right now, and then whenever I start playing Pokemon, I go, all right, I'll throw $20 to Switch Online. I'm using it. And then it's just not even a thought about it. And so I'm not thinking about a value proposition, and I don't think most people are. I think it's literally going to be a price per entry for a service from a game that they're playing, and that they kind of don't even really believe in their own online service, and so they're probably moving labor away from programs meant to push it.
I think that, see, the thing is like, I think that these services are such a huge part of their income, and I know a lot of people who don't ever touch the online of Nintendo games ever. Like, ever, ever. Like, my girlfriend, I think the only time she ever subscribed to Switch Online was to play the N64 games. Like, that was it. And quite frankly, outside of when I was really into Smash Ultimate, I pay for Switch Online to capture footage for us.
Yeah.
That's my big use for that, is to capture N64 SNES Game Boy game footage. So it's like, I don't know, I just feel like this is such a big value loss. Like but then I'm like, okay, well, how many people actually know about the program? You know,
Yeah, because I didn't know about the program until I read this news story about it.
that's a bummer, because you, man, this over the years that it existed, which started
Seems
to,
definitely useful. Seems like I should have
oh
used the program.
yeah, like there, if you know, I don't know about you, but I almost buy most of Nintendo's first party lineup. I think the only thing I really,
I don't usually.
I think the only thing I don't buy is Pokemon, actually.
I am the inverse. My Switch is a Pokemon machine.
They should make good Pokemon games again, and I would join you on this
They
bandwagon.
should. They should. I certainly wish they did. I, however, am chained by 1DS and 2DS and another Game Boy and four more DSs over there.
Okay, maybe you can explain this to me, because I need to have this, and we have some time to kill, because we have a lot, have a lot of news stories today.
Yeah.
What is this? Just like, there's such a large amount of people who are
Yes.
just insane for Pokemon.
Yeah.
Pokemon is so fucking beloved to them. Even when the game turns to trash, to the point of I've
Terrible.
never seen it in another franchise. Like, when Halo went to shit, people stopped playing it. When like other franchises go to shit, they start to get ignored or like less focus. Like Pokemon,
Right.
just no one leaves. No one fucking leaves. Everyone plays those fucking games, even when they're not good. And it's like crazy to me. And I'm just like, guys, this is just kind of an okay JRPG. You can get a lot of this experience from playing Persona.
So, I have too much to say about this, so I'll try and keep myself contained. I think that there are a lot of avenues of interest for Pokemon that are not offered elsewhere. Persona, like you said, actually does offer a lot of things that Pokemon offers. I think their characters are less iconic and definitely a lot less lovable. I mean, come on, are you seeing the Persona summons? There's like a few of them that are great,
Are
but
you
like.
telling me that you don't want a giant dick monster Pokemon with
I know,
teeth?
right? Like,
How could you not want
that would be
this?
amazing. So there's the avenue that there's a lot of casual fans that just they love the characters, they're very nostalgic, and they'll go, yeah, whatever. I have a fun time whenever I play it, so I might as well just keep playing it. Then there's like competitive people, and in that case, there is truly no game like
Yeah,
Pokemon.
I will give
There.
you the competitive people. That is the only thing of its type.
There is no analog. There is no comparison. You can play Pokemon or you can play nothing. Because any game that has ever tried to replicate it has been either much simpler or just it's just not competitive in its nature. There's nowhere near anything that has ever replicated the level of complexity that Pokemon has in its competition. And then there's also the collector types. And in that regard, there's also nothing like Pokemon. You can talk about what there was a Temtem that came out before, and I think it got a sequel as well. And it may even have transferability. I'm not exactly familiar, but the level of transferability across its six generations is how far you can take you can take a Pokemon all the way from the Game Boy onto the Switch. That's ridiculous. The number of things to collect is itself also absurd. And then obscure mechanics like there being shinies and the breeding mechanics. There's enough going on there that someone who wants to get into Pokemon has infinite ground to get into it.
All right, fair enough. I know when Aaron and I have had this discussion, for him it's the world. He loves being in that world.
Yeah.
I
Yeah, and
don't
that's the thing for a lot of people.
and I don't get the appeal of that world. I'm like, this is insert countryside with monsters. Like I
I
Yeah,
feel
some
like games
I
are stronger about it, some games are weaker. I think Scarlet and Violet was a really weak example of trying to bring people in on the premise of like, this is the Pokemon universe, because it just, I think it just felt different and off. I think that they had a really consistent feel, especially ranging from the fourth through the sixth generation. I think once you get, or the fourth through the seventh, I think once you get onto the Nintendo Switch, they had a bit of a weird transition where things felt very different. And I think that was particularly bad in Scarlet Violet.
That, so I can kind of tell you where my like I'll give you a brief rundown of my Pokemon history. Gen 1er, love Gen 1 and 2,
Love it, yeah.
was the perfect age group for it. The first game came out when I just turned 8. I was could not have been a more perfect target for Pokemon. Those I was obsessed. The Gen 3 kind of takes a while to come out. I get it for my Game Boy Advance. I beat it. I generally like it, but I kind of moved on to playing, kind of heavier JRPGs. Like, that was around the time I started playing Final Fantasy and stuff like that. Entirely skipped Gen 4, because I think by the time that came out, I was already considering selling my DS or sold my DS because there was anything I really wanted to play on it. And I, and then I played Gen 5 and hated it. Couldn't stand Gen
Yeah.
5. But then I
Some
played.
people hate it.
What?
I think it's great. I said some people
Sorry.
hate it, but I think it's great.
But then Gen 6 came out and I loved it. I fell in love with Pokemon all over again. Like
I love Gen 6.
I was playing it. Like, I was also in a perfect situation to be playing because, we were working on a gaming website where everyone had a 3DS and was playing Pokemon. And then on top of that, I was working in a call center for tech support. And turns out most people who work in tech support are giant goddamn nerds. And everyone had 3DSs and were playing Pokemon. It was, and then I like, I get older, that kind of fades into the background. And Sun and Moon is coming out, and I'm getting stoked. And I go to play it, and I have just never, I was so disappointed. I was so disappointed. Like, it took forever to get where it needed to go. Like, they gave me the world's longest tutorial, and I was just like, dude, this
Yeah, it
is
is a very long one.
dude,
Infamously, it has a abysmal. This is Gen 7 you're talking about. Sun and Moon has an abysmal shiny hunt for its starters because it's multiple minutes of waiting every single time before you can get your starter.
So I oh God, and then I played Sword and Shield on a rental because that's when I saw Gamefly, and my take on that game and all the Switch games is, this is unacceptable. You are the biggest media franchise in the world. This is your first full console release, and it looks and runs like a PS2 game. You couldn't bother to update anything meaningful. Your gimmick for this kind of sucks with the like that was like this is
Especially with removing the most well-received gimmick in the franchise history, Dynamax removing Mega Evolution, it
right.
was an insanely bad move.
Mega Evolutions were hyped as hell. Like, I loved,
Oh yeah.
like, but that's, so, and then, yeah, and I heard all the stuff about Scarlet and Violet, and I didn't play it. It might have gotten better, but I saw the videos of it running at like 15 FPS, and I was like, nah, dog, I'm good.
It doesn't run better even now. It still runs terribly.
And I'm just like, this is, and then, like, it also looked like trash while running like trash, and I'm like, you sit and you compare that to, like, Breath of the Wild, which doesn't run great all the time, but it certainly runs better than that, and is also a massive open world that looks pretty good and just like.
Yeah, and it's a real shame with Scarlet and Violet because I think its world is also actually quite charming, despite being very different. I didn't feel as much like Pokemon did previously to me, but it had this this just nice, cute, comfy sense and characters that were good. I feel, and it was a huge disappointment that I felt that was deeply squandered by the fact that the game runs awful and looks bad.
I I just want Pokemon to get the treatment that it quite frankly probably deserves. I think that I'm like, that's the part of it that's like the most frustrating in my mind. And like, it's never gonna happen because people keep hanging around.
Well, we've talked before on the show. I talked with Aaron about how, this is a sort of impossible problem where the things that they would need to do in order to make the games come out better and do everything that people want them to do for Pokemon would necessarily also get in the way of all of the things about Pokemon that make infinite money. All of the media releases, all of the merchandise releases, all of the companion games, all of that would have to would be harmed by delaying development and by putting a lot of effort into trying to really scale up Game Freak. It would be too difficult to do while also keeping to the timelines that they have to do to continue making the infinite money that they currently make.
So, my thing with that is, I think you could still do all of that and just not put out the new game, or just put out the side game. Put out your ZA, your Arceus, your Pokemon Puzzle League, whatever
But
you want
the
to do.
contracts are already in place. The contracts are already in place for the new Pokemon with the new plushies and the new cards. And if
But
we
at the
delay
end,
that release, we're going to have to delay the production pipeline for all of the
no,
physical merchandise and all the media.
and I don't think you do. You can just say, hey, these are characters that are coming in the new game in 2 years. So that's what they, granted the timeline was shorter, but they totally put out the first, they put out the first, I think even the second Pokemon movie with Pokemon from a game that wasn't out yet.
But they did that on purpose. That was specifically meant to promote the new game.
Yeah, you could totally do that with a current upcoming batch of Pokemon. Or, wild idea here, I know. There's like 800 goddamn Pokemon, I believe. I don't know what the total is now. Stop. Just stop for a little bit.
The amount of money that is set on fire for every single day that Pokemon stops. I mean, you're not going to stop your merch production pipeline, right? Even if you're like, oh, this is what we're going to do. We're just going to get this started now. And oh, well, I guess it'll come out 2 years from now. You're going to have a warehouse full of merch just sitting there that you can't sell. You're going to be paying for storage costs. And you were expecting a timeline on the return from investment from the contracts that you created to make that merch in the first place. On top of card production, there's a planned meta and a planned series of tournaments for the card game. That game also heavily relies on having that new content to develop the meta for it to not become a stale and bad to play game. And then there's also,
And I'm saying
the
that
media
you.
production, which has to go 1 to 2 years in advance. At a certain point, they're going to run out of material to air, if you're delaying by an entire year that
Here
doesn't
it's.
have the new content in it.
So I've been informed it's over 1,000 Pokemon, and here's my stance on that. If you can't
Well over, yeah.
reconfigure 1,000 Pokemon to be interesting in a new game or new merchandise or new card games, then you're fucking bad at your job.
Right, they are
Fucking
bad. They are absolutely bad. But getting good requires putting a 1 to 2 year halt on the super money machine that is printing infinity
Oh,
dollars for them.
God.
And then they would be great, and we would have good Pokemon games, and those good Pokemon games would
Just
come at the cost of making less money at the end of it. It's just not financially worth it for them to make a better Pokemon game.
All right, so this is my challenge to Pokemon fans. I know it's never gonna happen. I'm wasting my breath on saying this, but I want you to do this, Pokemon fans. Do me a solid. Stop buying Pokemon shit, cards, the games, everything until they fix this problem.
Yeah, I
Just
would love if that happened.
stop. Just
It's
stop.
not though. And in fact, if we're talking about the reality of the games business, the reaction to people not buying Pokemon shit would not be for them to improve Pokemon games.
Yeah, that look, you Don't meme it up here for a second. That is a sacrifice I'm willing to make.
Right, I'm just saying that the result of everyone going, all right, we're gonna hold back until you start making good games again, is that they're gonna have their fingers in their ears and they're gonna go, I guess people don't like Pokemon anymore. We should put less money into this.
And my thought process is, you know, they have to see the quality of the games currently. That's not something that's like in a vacuum. And
yeah, they're
like,
clearly aware. They have to be.
Like, I would hope that someone on the leadership team goes, maybe it's because the last three games we put out kind of suck. Maybe we should make the good game instead. And that's why people didn't buy the most recent one, is because the last couple has sucked. Oh, but all right. This is.
You know, the thing is like they'll say maybe we should make a good one instead, and they go, yeah, you know, that's a great idea, we should make a good one. Can you make it by next year still? Because you have to make it by next year still.
I'm saying if other studios have taken a year off, if we can get a you know, like just yeah,
if they, I'm like, just saying other studios don't have an anime and like whole dedicated factories to their characters and like giant buildings that are like temples in the modern day dedicated to the God. Sheer worship of Pokemon. They're operating on a hereto unprecedented level of infinite money.
They are running an even more extreme version of the Star Wars playbook. Yes. And
the most profitable media franchise of all time.
And my response to Star Wars for the past 4 years has been, guys, stop for a while. And the thing that drives me crazy,
and they respond by releasing another Disney Plus show.
Yeah, and my response, and it's my response to Star Wars and my response to Pokemon is like, the fans are never going to stop. So it's like, cool, I can't enjoy this anymore, because they're not going to improve the quality of it, and it's just a tailspin, and that's unfortunate, but it is what it is.
We disagree in no regard about the direction of wish for the games industry and media production industry to go, but I see no hope in you know, the market. It exists to crush our spirits and dreams.
I'm saying that maybe you should all go play Pal World. Pal World for a bit. I'm saying,
it's actually pretty fun. You should
go do your slave camp simulator with the little creatures instead of the RPG with the little creatures.
They're releasing stuff still.
There you go. See, go do Pal World until Pokemon gets its shit together. There you go.
Yeah.
Indie alternatives, people.
Got their infinite money and they said, let's make more stuff.
Yeah, there you go. See? Anyway, we got one more bit of this Nintendo news before we move on to the other two stories, which is Nintendo is ending its Nintendo Gold Points Switch eShop rewards, which, like, the basic math on that since 2016 is if you spend $60, I think you get a dollar. Or no, for every $10, you get a dollar, I believe. Was that the ratio?
Yeah, you get roughly 10%. You buy 10 games, you buy a game.
Yeah, so, yeah, you buy 10 games, you get a game. And, they're ending that at the same time, March 25th. Can't earn points anymore. You can still be used within 12 months of being earned. So you have the rest of the year to blow your Switch gold that you stacked up. But this is a bummer, because I liked my, like, $5 off an indie game every year and a half.
That's pretty cool. If I buy 10 games, which I rarely ever do, I would like to get a game. Beyond that, you don't even actually have to buy 10 games and get a game. You can buy 2 games and then remember that you have the points and then get 20% of that game off.
Yep. So, all right, well, this sucks. I hope that... What I'm hoping for, especially because all this stuff is ending at the end of March, I'm hoping part of their Switch 2 presentation is, and we have a new rewards program.
That would be cool. I hope that is the case. You know, I I feel like I'm definitely long shot here with my feeling that they're trying to pull away from having a rewards program. Maybe they'll do another one.
Yeah, maybe. All right, well, we got our next news story.
We do.
Mr. Shuhei Yoshida has been doing the interview circuit since he retired. He recently did an interview and said, "I had no choice." Says he had to take over the PlayStation indie role or leave. He says his decision to focus on smaller titles was made for him. In 2019, he got moved from First Party to go build relationships with indie developers. Apparently, he didn't have a choice. Jim Ryan said, "Yo, we need you to do this or leave the company."
Yeah.
And that's essentially it. Moving from first party to indies, then leaving the company 4 years later. So.
I feel like a lot of this story is Shuhei Yoshida going, "No, but I liked it. No, but I really liked it though. I didn't have a choice in doing it, but if I did have a choice, I would have made that choice. I definitely would have still done that."
Yeah, I look, I don't have good opinions of Jim Ryan for a lot of different reasons.
Yeah.
It's very apparent that the entire direction he wanted to ch take PlayStation in was to be another EA or Ubisoft or Take-Two, where
Yeah, and
money
you hate
printer.
Ryans, just anyone with that name also.
Yes, totally, absolutely. I actually don't, but
What, are you saying you're not violently enraged by Ryan? So, he lies for
no,
the
I was a big fan of Ryan Davis. He was cool.
Oh, see, there you go. He proved me wrong. Foiled
Anyway.
again. I agree. That's definitely the direction that Sony's been moving in, though, is that they want to be, the giga developer, that which would swallow the world.
Yeah, and like, I don't think that you can do that while you're a first party studio. Like, you have to
Yeah.
support your platform with exclusives or and other stuff like that. And Jim Ryan wanted to take them there. And Jim Ryan also
Yeah.
was the reason they did a whole bunch of push for live service. And all of this worked out well. And none of the thing went wrong during that process.
Yeah,
So.
they definitely didn't cancel like what, like 11 live service games
Yeah.
recently.
So, and Shuhei Yoshida during the story said he says, "I became an advisor for these companies and I'm continuing to work with some indie publishers, developers I respect. The transition out of Sony to becoming independent advisor is less of a change than moving out of first party." And he's
Yeah.
like, "Yeah. My goal when I started the indie job was to make my position obsolete. The company would be doing so well, there was no need for someone to me like me to tell everyone this was important, and I feel I've achieved that pretty
Right.
well."
I mean, he evidently leaves a Titanic legacy with Sony. He was just such a gigantic part of it.
I mean, he spent 31 years at the company, and his like goal was to show everyone there like, no, this PlayStation thing is the real deal. It's important. It's gonna be huge. It's the
Yeah.
bee's knees, as the kids might say.
He is one of the giants of the video games industry. I feel that, he's just a huge part of why games are the way they are right now.
I think the way that they handled promotion and the way that they handled courting developers to come make stuff for PlayStation. Getting play
Yeah.
developers away from Sega and Nintendo and on to PlayStation and kind of being willing to support more adult games, like put being able to support
Right.
games like Tomb Raider and Resident Evil and Metal Gear and stuff that was kind of a little more mature. And then in doing the same thing later on and kind of completely turning around the PlayStation's fortunes with like the nightmare that was PS3, they turned it around, and then everyone's gonna remember Shu for that video. This is how you play your games on PlayStation 4. or share your games on PlayStation 4, and just hands it to him.
Yeah. And I think even his modern work with the indie side of the company has been evidently successful. I think there's a great range of indie titles on PlayStation. And you know, that's obviously due to his work effectively screaming about how important indie title and indie support is for PlayStation.
Yeah,
Because that was his job.
and they even got a lot of good indies to come out on like their Game Pass competitor. Like Sea of Stars
Yeah.
was on there day one. So was Stray. So was Plucky Squire. Like they've had some good stuff. My thing with this is just like it just shows how Jim Ryan just really feels like he didn't know what the hell he was doing. Like you look at the shift of
Yeah,
PlayStation.
you know,
You look at the shift of.
companies, they can't make good decisions. They gotta think about the shareholders. The shareholders want them to make good decisions, but they want them to do it the way they want them to do it, which is by not doing it. So,
I'm not sure if I sent you that video, but it's the one that the title was "Investors Exist to Be Lied To,"
yeah.
and the more I years the more I report on the video game industry over my over a decade at this point is like that is more true than ever.
You can't get ahead in business without lying to your investors. It's
Yes.
always moral.
It is when it comes to artistic projects, at least, so far as I'm concerned.
Yeah,
I don't know.
you know,
Shuhei.
it's they've had a hard time, Sony. I feel especially lately, you know, given the Concord disaster. Right, I'm sorry, I'm weirdly blanking. They are Concord, yes.
Yeah, they were the Concord people. They
Okay,
spent
so they set $500 million on fire.
400. There was 200 for the studio, 200 for the game. So yeah, the real funny part about all of that, I feel like Sony gets cut a lot of slack by the game
Yeah.
enthusiasts and the game's press because Xbox is just doing so poorly. Like I feel like
Right.
it is this effect of there is this burning ginormous trash fire. So it makes your regular dumpster seem okay.
Yeah, you know, when you look at it, who in the games industry really is doing good? And the answer is Nintendo, but we just kind of they're off in their corner. We don't think about them.
It's like Nintendo and then select third parties. Like Capcom's doing great right now.
Yeah,
Capcom's
they're doing awesome.
Sunshine and Rainbows right now. They're
I
about
played
to
30 minutes of that Monster Hunter Wilds, and like, damn, Capcom.
You got that's gonna be a money printer. Dragon's
Yeah,
Dogma
it
2,
always is.
top 10 best selling game of last year. Year before that, Resident Evil and Street Fighter were top 10 sellers. Like
Yeah, and like, it's like they keep making good games. It's this weird strategy that they've been choosing about taking their games and like giving them enough development time and resources. I don't know. Inventive, I guess.
I know it's this weird thing where when they make good video games and they put them out at a decent price and don't try and nickel and dime you and put you in microtransaction hell, and then they sell. It's weird. I don't know what's
Yeah.
happening there.
It seems like they're also making like really economical use of their resources. Like I feel like they have just squeezed RE Engine and really got a lot out of using that engine for a lot of games.
I think Capcom is a total case study in why having a first-party engine is so important and like can be beneficial for a lot of different reasons. I know that the default is
Yeah.
we want to work on Unreal, Unity, whatever it is, like different engines, but like I feel like Nintendo and Capcom are both total cases of like, man, if we're willing to put the time and effort into our own in-house engine, it really saves cost in the long run, and it helps us a lot, provided it's not a nightmare to work with.
I feel like Nintendo isn't even being particularly efficient about it. They're just doing it, and like they let the game be developed long enough, Pokemon notwithstanding, as we previously spoke. You know, they let the game be developed long enough that that it comes out good. They haven't set up a situation like they have with Pokemon for Mario, where they need the game to come out.
There was a very like there was a talk from Nintendo at a GDC ages ago that like does not apply to the broader video game industry because Nintendo is one of the few companies that's willing to tell its investors to go shove it for a little bit. It's
Yeah.
very, you know, I don't know why
They're really
they're,
good at it.
which
I mean, they
is.
exist on another stock market. They're on the Japanese stock market, and so they're
Yeah.
following different sets of regulations. So that can definitely contribute to it. That and also they can tank a massive drop in stock and bounce back, and they know that they can because they have like some of the most liquid funds of like companies in the world. Like they hold on to a massive fund for in case another Wii U happens, which is how they were able to tank a Wii U on the chin and be like, oh, that sucked. I guess the year of Luigi wasn't as good as we thought it would be. And then they kept going and they just made other stuff.
On that note, though, like I think that you know, but back to the GDC thing I want to talk about is like Nintendo's advice at that talk was basically, yeah, just delay it, just keep working on it until it's done. There you go, till it's
Yeah.
good. Work on it till it's good. It's just like, well, yeah, that's great if you're Nintendo, man. That's
Yeah.
awesome if you're Nintendo, I guess. But you know, so anyway, we have our last news story.
Xbox.
Xbox, we talked about them a lot yesterday, and today, the original Xbox designer, a Mr. Seamus Blackley, says power is not a selling point for consoles now. In an interview with Video Gamer, which I love that there is a press outlet just called Video Gamer.
Yep.
A plus naming there, said that the power
They do
first
great.
said that the power first approach worked for the original Xbox back in 2001, since graphics weren't as polished as they are now. Focusing in the narrative on computing power helped the Xbox stand out amongst Japanese hardware companies. Quote, we were a Western company. We were saying, okay, we're going to lose money on these to make them super powerful and take a bet on games being awesome. Explaining back then, the original Xbox was the only console with a hard drive and the only one that can handle games like Halo, Elder Scrolls, Fable, and Shenmue 2. It was a way for the Xbox to get its foot in the door and in the console space. But if he was still at Microsoft, he would not have continued focusing on power for the brand. He also reminisced on seeing Gran Turismo for the first time on the original PlayStation, saying how he absolutely had to buy it because graphics were ahead of the time. However, he acknowledged that graphical power has hit a plateau, and he doesn't get excited about power anymore, explaining that the battle for content has pivoted to where platform holders need to create compelling experiences, in which he pointed the Switch where he played through it 3 or 4 times. Portability factor also granted him long Skyrim sessions on airplane flights. Yeah, we've kind of talked about this in the past where we've kind of talked about this in the past on the show where like diminishing returns are at an all-time high. Like,
Yeah.
quite frankly, if Nvidia would just put more VRAM in their goddamn cards, I would not be upgrading my GPU. I would just be upgrading my CPU this year,
Yeah.
but I'm VRAM bottlenecked. Thanks, NVIDIA.
Right.
So, and like
Well,
consoles are just.
the era of the Xbox was one where when the Xbox came out, it was in this weird phase where it was like it doesn't have a competitor performance-wise. Like you're not
No.
going to
Your
these games aren't
competitor
going to be
was the
on other
PC.
consoles.
Your competitor
Yeah,
was the
these games aren't going to
computer.
be on other consoles because other consoles can't run the games.
Exactly.
And that was an incredible place to be, and it was an inefficiency in the market. It was something that, Microsoft was able to see and go, "Hey, there's room for us to break into and siphon away from this PC market that's very inaccessible for people, and let guys who don't own a complicated PC play video games in their college dorm because, like, you don't have to be like a guy
I
who
hate
gets
this.
what his PC is made of to play Halo. And that was evidently gigantic for the success of Microsoft with the Xbox. And nowadays, like, the strategy only works the one time. You know, there's not a gap in the market for console performance. The consoles perform. People are making their games to perform on the consoles. So, you know, it's not the reverse where the consoles are pitching themselves as a way to play these things more easily. The games are suiting themselves to the consoles because the consoles where the people are.
And I also think that I also think that like just the most people are still on a 1080p monitor, and you know like kind of if they are on a 4K TV, it's kind of an entry level one. And I feel we are at the point of where like if you are gonna get more out of hardware, like if you are gonna use a PS5 Pro or a 4080 or a you know a 5080 or higher. Like where your investment should be is like a better screen, dude. Like I can tell you right now, the number one upgrade to my setup over the past since I built this computer was getting a 4K OLED monitor with VRR. Like that is honestly what I would tell 90% of people playing video games is like if you have a graphics card that can drive it, so like a 4070 or up, what you need to be doing is you need to be going and getting yourself a OLED high-end monitor because you're not going to notice all this extra stuff they're doing or any of the extra horsepower on those graphics cards or on like a PS5 Pro without it. It
Yeah,
just
and I could say that personally, Cyberpunk 2077 is a game that became worth playing for me when I got a rig that could run it at 4K and had a screen that could see that. And I think there's a lot of games out there that a huge part of the value proposition for their graphics is really hinged on players having a lot of things that most people don't.
No, like I totally think that a lot of the graphics bloat and a lot of the budget bloat in terms of graphics is exactly that. It's like this is stuff that's going to look amazing if you have in the PC space the graphics card to drive it, or in all spaces the TV to drive it. I remember, you know, which because like yeah, I like played Avowed today, and I'm like, man, the colors pop so much, the resolution looks so clean, like holy shit, this game looks good. And then I like loaded it up on because I have a good monitor and a bad monitor, and I have the nice TV. And I load it up on the bad monitor, and I'm like, this looks fine, I guess. It looks like a good video game. Like that the barrier now is the monitor, but it's so hard to sell people on that. Like a good 4K OLED monitor starts like the 27 inches starts at like $600. And a good 4K OLED TV starts at like a grand almost.
It's very expensive.
You know, and that's it's just not for most people. So why are we designing for that? For most, you know, unless you are like the most AAA studio, and you're like, well, we do want to support those 3% of people who have that setup.
I mean, yeah, the answer is that most people aren't designing for it. It's large companies with huge budgets that want to be making the best thing, and they're looking for every avenue of investment that results in them making the best thing.
I
They're
don't.
looking to make the best thing. They don't do that, but they know for certain that a point of comparison that they can have to other games is their graphical fidelity. And so they know that the quote unquote quality of the game will go up directly when you invest in the graphics of the game, regardless of whether or not that investment is going to have incredible return, it'll have safe return.
And I think that in the current world, outside of a couple of exceptions, I don't think it even has that. Like, I think most players do not give a shit. The only exception I've really ever seen is when we upgraded my girlfriend to an SSD and a better graphics card 2 years ago or so, she was like, oh my God, this is what I've been missing. And then the other time is when we bought the OLED TV, and she was like, "Oh my God, everything looks so clean. Like the lines are perfect." And it's like,
Yeah.
it's just like, and I think that the amount of people who care enough, and you talk about cost ballooning in the industry, it's like, is it really worth investing in getting that extra like 5% for, 1% of the audience or whatever it is who's gonna go, "Oh, that looks really good," and then go and then,
It's absolutely not worth it, for sure. The thing is that whether or not someone makes an investment isn't exactly relative to its return. It's a big motivator is risk. And major companies like this know that there is an association with quality and graphics, which make it an incredibly attractive point of investment, regardless of whether or not that investment is going to have significant return, because the better your graphics are, the more your game will be associated with quality. That return probably isn't going to be worth it, but it's a much easier decision to make to improve your graphics than it is to gamble on something that is less sure.
But also my response is, okay, these budgets are have gone insane. Is that even a safe return anymore? It's
Right, it's absolutely not
like
the right decision, and it's something that requires a lot of organizational correction to prevent your company from engaging in. But I think that the reason that so many companies engage with it is because it feels like a move that could be safely made, regardless of whether or not it's the right move. They know what will happen when they improve their graphics.
I mean, I will hope in the coming years this changes as we see more and more like, oh, they really didn't help them sell copies, huh?
I think it will. I think the difficulty of improving your graphical fidelity is immense, especially with releases like GTA 6 coming out that look just so unbelievably good that it's like you're gonna start realizing that your company can't compete with it, even if you are Sony.
I think that is, when and granted, $100 million of this was licensing fees, but when you're hearing Cyberpunk after it got fixed totaled out to $500,000, and then you look at Spider-Man hitting $315 million, you're like, okay, dude, and those are the probably the two best looking games I've ever seen from a technical standpoint. At
Yeah,
some
and so you know
point.
there's still absolutely an association with good-looking game, good performance.
Right, except a lot of the time the performance is bad. Like Wukong, the kind of hardware you need to get 60 FPS out of Wukong, which is also
I don't
another
mean performance, I
style.
mean financial
Oh,
performance.
yes. Okay. Yeah. Like, that's another thing.
Companies still think it means the game will do good.
Well, they can be wrong, and then Nintendo and Capcom can
And they
still be
will.
rolling in money.
And they will.
Just like, oh, we made this Mario game that's 1080p and like running on a 10-year-old engine, and it sold a bajillion copies. Oh,
Yep.
that's cool. All right, well, we're gonna go do that then. Anyway, we're a little over, but hey, that's a show. You can
That is a show.
find us on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcast services, all around the world. This is currently a daily show. We'll be back tomorrow. Actually, it'll be Aaron and Lucy will be back tomorrow. Yeah, we'll see you then. We love you guys. Follow us on socials, like all our stuff, and stalk us like prey animals. Bye.
Please give us your attention lest we die.
Yes, we will die without it. All right, bye, y'all.